Hello, Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to another edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. I'm Jasmine Smith. Robert asked me to do the intro today because he is not confident in his vocal abilities.
Right.
Robert, how are you doing?
I will say I'm channeling my inner Elizabeth Warren, and I'm persisting.
Okay.
I've been sick for about a week, and like the one thing you need to do a podcast is a voice.
That's true.
And I'm sure all these people are like, who's this new strange person on your podcast? But it's actually still me. I just sound crazy.
But you're going to persist, and we're going to talk about some Kentucky politics today.
Sure.
So today on the show, we are going to be talking about the Yum Center again. We have a Yum Center update. We're going to be talking about the adoption czar and some tax revenue. All right, let's get started, Robert.
Okay, well, I think we should start with the Yum Center update. The Louisville Arena Authority Chairman, Scott Cox, we've talked about this person before in previous shows. He was appointed to this position not too long ago by Governor Bevin. This man, Scott Cox, he made news in several outlets on Monday, May 15th, this Monday, when he made statements about the lack of an agreement to refinance the Yum Center. So, just to remind everybody, the current structure to pay for the Yum Center is probably unsustainable. It's a three-legged stool, I guess I'll put it that way. There's a TIF district. It was drawn up to generate revenue. It's currently underperforming. Metro Louisville has amended their agreement to ensure that they pay the maximum going forward and given the mayor some ability to negotiate the deal going forward, because that's the second leg of the stool, Metro government's payments towards the Yum Center. And the last leg of the stool is the University of Louisville. So we've talked at length about HB 330. We had Joni Jenkins on the show last week to talk to us about that at length. And basically the state government passed a law which extended the TIF district for up to 25 more years, made a lot more money available, with the understanding that UofL was coming to the table with $2.5 million more. So that was supposed to, like, all this was going to come together. Metro Louisville was going to give a little bit more money. The TIF district was going to be expanded. And UofL was going to agree to pay at least $2.5 million more. And they were going to come out a little bit later after the session ended. And they were going to say, hey, here is our new structure for the payments for the Yum Center. That has not yet happened. So Mr. Cox is quoted in both Insider Louisville and WDRB as saying that it is he's starting to be extremely concerned. That's the words he used, extremely concerned that an agreement is not yet in place. So the reason why the time is a little bit of the essence here is the state acted, and we talked a little bit about this with Representative Jenkins last week. Interest rates are really low right now. So the Federal Reserve has started the process of increasing interest rates, however, and it looks like, I mean, all signs point to that process continuing and probably accelerating in the near future.
Right. And Joni Jenkins, actually, when we talked to her, she said this is part of the reason why she thought this would be a good idea at the time because of the low interest rates.
Right. Which are not going to last, probably not even for another year. So Mr. Cox said, we need to work on a new lease agreement with the university now, period. Now.
He
said now twice. So that's what it was reported. Two nows. So he's very concerned.
Nows.
He's very concerned that this needs to get done, double now. So interim UofL president Greg Postel. How do you say that guy's name? Postel? Postel? I don't know how to say it.
I don't know either.
Yeah, well, he probably won't be there very long, so we don't need to learn it. Interim UofL president Greg Postel released a statement to the media outlet saying that UofL had indeed agreed to pay at least $2.5 million annually to the authority, but there's no formal agreement. So, you know, Scott Cox is running around like, hey, you know, all this stuff has said Metro Louisville, they're increasing their payments. Then the mayor's negotiating and the state passed a law. UofL is like, yeah, we're on board too, but there's no agreement. So, you know,
you want to have things in writing.
Right.
That's something you learn really early in law school.
Right. And
get contracts. This
has absolutely been part of the big issue with this whole process. So the next thing that Mr. Cox said in both of these media outlets, he said, I don't want to negotiate the lease agreement with UofL in the media.
That's a little bit like what he's doing.
It seems like exactly what he's doing. He's definitely negotiating in the media with, you know, Marcus Green and Joe Sanka going to these guys and being like, we need this to be negotiated, UofL, wink, wink. I'm not negotiating in the media, but he's totally doing that.
I guess, okay, maybe he's not negotiating, but he's saying they need to negotiate.
Right, sure. Okay, whatever. So, okay, just to put a number on this whole process, There are some analysts that say that capitalizing on the current interest rates and raising the ratings of the bond, which are currently junk status, but with you know, hopefully a new funding structure in place, they say that that could save $60 million in the long run.
That's a solid amount of money.
What would you do with $60 million? I could think of a lot of things. Yeah, exactly. So
pay off student loans would be numero uno.
Right. So, I mean, it isn't, you know, percentage wise, it's not a big chunk of money related to the total cost of the project, but that's a lot of money that could go towards a lot of things. And that would be money that one of these three organizations are going to have to pay. And all three of those organizations could put that money to better use. So, Jasmine, if you remember Chris McDaniel, Senator Chris McDaniel, who's the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. When we talked about HB 330, it passed the House. It was sponsored by Jeff Hoover and Joni Jenkins, passed the House, went to the Senate, and the Senate almost scuttled the bill. We talked about this at length, but basically he attached a bunch of poison pills to it.
Yeah, the poison pills.
He was like, anything above a certain amount will go to pensions, and he was like, you know, if we're shutting this down unless UofL gives us money for sure. But he eventually relented and allowed the bill to be passed. But he did say, after all this was made relevant to him, he said he would work to scrap this new law if UofL reneged on paying $2.5 million. So if UofL does not come to the table and this lease isn't agreed to, that law that extends the TIF, he says he's going to work towards reversing that. There's no telling if he'd be able to do that. Of course, there's a lot of people standing in his way, but he's a pretty powerful person. He's the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. So that's a pretty big statement. That's to say, you know, one of the more powerful people in the Kentucky Senate would be working to scrap this new law if this doesn't come together the way he wants. At the end of the day, though, Jasmine, the thing is, UofL is totally in the driver's seat.
Right.
We have the people who issued the UofL doesn't have bond issuance authority. They get their authority from the state. Basically, anytime they want to issue bonds, they have to ask the state to do it, and they use the authority of the state to do so. And then, you know, so the state and the city are the people who are actually issuing these bonds, and their ability to pay them reflects on them much, much less than it does UofL. And UofL, you know, they don't really have much, they don't have as much incentive as the other two partners.
Not at all.
to get this off the ground. And so, you know, if they renege on this $2.5 million, the building is built, they're playing games in there, and basically the city and the state would suffer, and UofL, you know, I'm not saying that would be painless for them, but it's much less pain. And it's trying to figure out if it's worth it for them to pay $2.5 million besides just the goodwill argument.
Right. Yeah. Really, the only incentive is goodwill / public pressure, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, if they wanted to issue bonds and they were like, hey, state, can we issue bonds? The state's going to be like, no. But, you know, who knows? Who knows what they'd be able to do doing this? So, you know, there's other ways that we can look at this, but UofL is certainly in the catbird seat. And the only reason they have to come to the table is public pressure and goodwill. So we'll see what happens. But this was kind of a funny thing. And this is a topic we talk about a lot. So,
and it usually ends with UofL doesn't really have an incentive.
Yeah. So
here we are.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
All right.
Jasmine, tell us about the adoption czar.
All right. So 2 weeks ago, Governor Bevin hired an adoption czar. We mentioned this last week during our interview with Joni Jenkins, but there are some pretty interesting things about this hire that made it worth a segment on My Old Kentucky podcast. So who's the adoption czar? His name is Daniel Dumas, and he is a senior vice president with the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary.
That's in Louisville.
Robert, tell us a little bit about the Southern Baptist Seminary.
It's part of the Southern Baptist Convention. It's an extremely conservative training grounds for Southern Baptist ministers, which has a long, long history, and it hasn't always been as conservative as it is now, but, you know, right, it's a very big, beautiful, well-funded campus that's led by a man named Al Mohler, who is in the news. He's often cited as a conservative thinker of note, and it's, you know, one of the more prolific things about the city of Louisville, I would say.
Awesome. I knew you could give a good synopsis of Southern Baptist Seminary, because I know that you and I are very familiar with it, but others may not be. You probably are if you drive on Lexington Road in Louisville, though.
Right. Or if you like to sled. Great hill for sledding.
Yes, that's true. Daniel Dumas is also the executive director of the Center for Christian Preaching. He was in the Navy, and he came to Louisville from a church in California where he was a pastor there. He will begin this job as the adoption czar on June 19th. He has two adopted children, and he's also been a contributing author of Christian books, including one about adoption and another one about biblical manhood.
Biblical manhood. Yeah. This is a word where, if you've heard that phrase before, you know exactly what it means. But if you don't, it probably sounds some like kind of weird.
Right.
But it's just like, I think a good way to explain it is just to say like very traditional type man, role of man, like complementarian relationships and... Yeah. Or do yes. you think that's a good way to describe that?
Yes. Okay. So he's contributed to several Christian books, and those are two of the topics that he has written on. And he said that he wants to make the system faster, safer, more affordable, and more accessible. But I think that the part of this story that most people are interested in is his salary. He is going to make $240,000 annually, plus annual performance incentives not to exceed 20% of his base salary. That kind of seems like a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Right?
I'll do that job.
yeah, sure. Pay me to do it. So the contract is with Red Buffalo Ventures LLC in Louisville. I don't really know much about that.
I'm just kind of shuffling it through, not paying him directly. So it goes through a third party.
So the contract runs through June of 2018, and then it can be renewed for 2 years. And his contract says that he will be a special advisor on child welfare issues. To put this into perspective, the governor's salary is only like $100,000+.
Right, yeah.
And so this is a lot of money that we're paying him. I mean, what's the problem with the salary? I don't know. For one, child and family social workers are underpaid, they're understaffed, and they're underfunded. And they make, on average, about $38,000 annually. That seems kind of on the high end to me. So I don't know what all jobs are included in that figure, but that actually seems kind of high to me.
That might be the state social workers.
Right. We have a social work issue where they are not being paid, they're understaffed, they're underfunded, and so this person who is going to be fixing the system is going to make $240,000+ a year.
That's like six of these. I'm not good at math, but that seems like six.
Right. Maybe some other issues with this hire besides the salary. I think some people are probably concerned about his Southern Seminary ties.
Yeah, Kentucky Fairness came out very strongly against this, and the role of, I mean, Southern Seminary is incredibly anti-gay and kind of sees, I don't know, I think that they would have a significant issue with gay adoption.
Absolutely.
That's something that, you know, if we want to get people adopted, that's something we should support, I think.
Right. That's another concern that people have. And then also, Governor Bevin keeps saying he wants to rethink the way that we do foster care, but we don't really know what that means. Like, what does he mean by that? What is this adoption czar? What does he mean by making it faster, safer, more affordable? You know, what do those things mean? I think that people have different philosophies on how to reform the foster care system.
Right.
And Joni Jenkins talked a little bit about this last week, how there's kind of two schools of thoughts between Republicans and Democrats on how this works. When Bevin says he wants to rethink the way we do foster care, what does that mean? Does it mean to adopt the kids out? Because the goal of foster care is typically, in a lot of circumstances, reunification.
Mm-hmm.
Children have really, really, really strong ties to their biological family. Sometimes, like, quick permanency planning can be really damaging sometimes, and then their long-term mental health needs related to grief, loss, and trauma of their biological family that aren't getting met.
Right.
There are very different philosophies on how to treat the foster care system about permanency.
Right.
Issues. And so,
I mean, permanency is tough on both ends because the child, you know, if you're adopted out quickly to a family, you lose touch with your biological family very quickly, which could be damaging. But also, it's a fast decision about adopting a child from an adopter.
Right, exactly.
You know, you may need some space to, like, make sure that's what you want to do so you don't get yourself stuck into a situation you can't handle.
Absolutely. And so, we don't know anything about this, what this new czar is going to do, but I think that those are a few of the immediate concerns.
Well, and I think that also is an immediate concern that I have. We don't know what this person is doing. And there's already, I mean, we talked a little bit, again, we talked about this with Joni Jenkins, but she's on that adoption task force that's the Kentucky House has put together, and that group is not connected to the czar at all. So this is maybe a little bit duplicitous. or is the work that the legislature doing, is it going to, does it need somebody being paid $240,000 as a czar to help them? Or like, it didn't seem to me like anybody in that House work group was instrumental in helping to select this person.
No, it does not seem.
It seems like this person was just like a friend of Matt Bevin. So, you know, what are we getting for our money here? You know, and I'm not saying that like paying somebody $240,000 to do a job is bad.
Right. If they're really good at it and this reforms our system.
If we need, if we need somebody to do a job and the best person we could get to do it is worth $240,000 and that's going to pay off in the long run, that's a good use of money. But the thing is, it doesn't seem like there's any plan here whatsoever.
Right. And so, you know, a big problem in the foster care system, like I said, is being able to retain social workers because they're underpaid, understaffed, and underfunded. And so you want that money to be used in the best way it can to help the system. And so we don't know anything about what he's going to do. And we don't really know much about his experience with adoption or foster care other than he has adopted children.
Right.
I don't know, other than that and contributing to a book about it, what is his experience?
Yeah.
With,
does he know anything about foster care at all?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he's a special advisor for child welfare issues. So that's not just adoption. That's foster care as well. We don't know much about who he is or what we're going to do. So I think there's some concerns about that. And I'm sure that we will update this story as he begins his work and it starts to unfold.
All right. Jasmine, are you ready to talk about tax revenue?
Do we have to?
Jasmine, we have to talk about tax revenue.
Let's talk about taxes.
Okay, Jasmine. Kentucky's fiscal year ends on June the 30th. So the Kentucky Constitution requires that the budget for the state to be balanced. So if revenues are lower than expenditures throughout the year, something needs to happen to shore that up. We have to cut expenditures, and that has to be even at the end of the year. The state has a budget director, and his name is John Chilton, and he said that there indeed would be a budget shortfall of about $113 million this year, which is a pretty substantial amount relative to what it could possibly be. So to deal with the shortfall, the state has the ability to tap into what's called a rainy day fund. So this fund is contributed to when the opposite effect is in place. When we have more revenue than expenses, sometimes we can spend them on, you know, needed cash infusions to certain programs. We can give it to the pension, or we can give it to this rainy day fund. And right now, that rainy day fund has about $200 million in it, but only a quarter of the rainy day fund can be used in any given year. So even if we maxed out what we could possibly pull out of the rainy day fund, we would still be looking at about $60 million in shortfall. So the rest is going to get made up for in cuts.
Ah.
So, right. So last year we saw pretty substantial cuts made to universities, if you remember.
Right,
that.
We did.
Yeah, we saw, I think, a 9% cut, which was to take place over 2 years. And there's no telling what's going to be cut to make up for the shortfall this year. And guess who gets to decide, Jasmine?
Governor, probably.
The governor. The governor is the person who gets to decide. So Kentucky has a part-time legislature, so we don't really call them into session to fix this problem. We give the authority to the governor to figure out how to shore up the budget when we don't have enough income to meet our expenses.
I don't have a lot of confidence.
Yeah, so, it's probably not going to be good. It's never good.
Right.
Doesn't matter. We could have, you know, Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. Right. as the governor. If you have to cut $60 million, that's an impossible thing to do and have everybody be happy. But we have Matt Bevin. And he probably will cut stuff that we love and enjoy. But, you know, we have to cut from somewhere. But what I think is something that's important to note about this is that the shortfall will probably be used by the governor as fodder for the rationale for the tax special session, which is upcoming. So in an interview with the Herald Leader, the House budget chairman called for more consumption taxes, which would disproportionately hurt poor people. This was in reference to the tax shortfall and saying, you know, there's a deep need for tax reform, as you can see by this tax shortfall, and we should do it by using more consumption taxes. So I think that you'll start seeing this shortfall being thrown around as a reason why we should increase consumption taxes, which we've talked about before in tax shows, as disproportionately hurting poor people. So be on the lookout for what actually is going to get cut, and it looks like we're either going to have to cut $113 million, somewhere between $60 million and $113 million of money off the budget this year.
It's a downer.
A little bit. All right, Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Do you think you can get through them?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got this. I got it. I'm struggling, but I'm persisting. Elizabeth Warren is powering through me. Okay. Jasmine, 10 protesters were arrested Sunday for blocking the entrance of EMW Women's Clinic, which provides abortions. Blocking the entrance of an abortion clinic was a very popular tactic for protesters in the 1990s, but has recently fallen out of favor. So clinic escorts report that no appointments were missed, but this group is going to be back in town in the near future, and we're looking for these more radical tactics to be used by these type of protesters.
So it didn't work. They just got arrested instead.
Many of them got arrested, but most people had to go through the back door. It was a huge scene. It was all over the news. It was all over Twitter. And so it was really ugly. And it's just difficult, I mean, for people who are seeking medical service to have to go through such a crazy gauntlet.
And, right.
Yeah, that's just sad. Okay. Jasmine, a personnel cabinet official from the Bashir administration named Walter Gaffield, he admitted to ethics charges of fundraising for campaigns on the job and paid a $6,000 fine. We talked a little bit about Bashir era people who were caught up in, there was like that Bashir report we talked about. But yeah, this guy, he admitted to ethics charges and he paid a fine. So there you go.
All right.
Jasmine, John Royalty, your favorite ex-mayor in the state. He's the former mayor of Bardstown. He is appealing the decision that removed him from office. So we talked about this a little bit before too, in a couple of different shows. I think he like stole a woman's iPad and was like looking through her emails, and she was a council member, and there was other shadiness, and you're convinced that there's like much, much more to this story.
Right. I think that there's just some stuff going on in Bardstown. I don't know what all it entails, but I don't know.
Well, we haven't heard the last from John Royalty. He is appealing his dismissal and may become the once and future mayor. So who knows? We'll find out soon enough. And then lastly, related to the adoptions are a little bit, the State Economic Development Cabinet, which, Jasmine, it didn't have a leader until a little bit more than a year into Matt Bevin's term. They hired a guy who, about a year ago, at a good salary, and they now have hired a second person making $240,000. So now there's two people in the State Economic Development Cabinet that are making $240,000. So the second person is named Vivek Sarin, and he is a personal friend of Matt Bevin. He was interviewed several times during while Matt Bevin was thinking about running for governor, talking about how great a guy he is. He's given to his campaign, and now this guy is now serving in an executive capacity with the state's economic development cabinet. Two people making $250,000 each, and you know, who's to say what the economic development cabinet is doing to help us out, and you know what we're getting back for that $500,000 that we're paying to two people. So.
Right.
It's a little wonky and shady.
With all those cuts we need to make, too.
Right. That's absolutely true. Where we just talked about, you know, two people that are making $250,000 each, one of which is the adoption czar, who is a professor at Southern Seminary, who wrote a book about adoptions, but we don't think knows much more about adoptions, and a personal friend of the governor, who is the second in command at the Economic Development Cabinet. So... seems, I don't know. I think that is not a good use of state resources. I'm confident in saying that.
I agree.
Okay, Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. We also have a Facebook page that you can like. We post our show notes on Medium, and you can listen to our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice.
Excellent. Do you feel like I'm more critical of the governor when I'm sick?
I don't know. Today's episode, it was all just a little depressing.
It was. I don't know, though. Like, it could be that I'm just a little sick and feeling a little bit more cranky. Mm-hmm. Could be. Well, who knows? Regardless, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we will see you guys next week.